Welcome to Innovation Calling,
the podcast where we connect the creators for the next big thing. We're your hosts, Aaron Smith
and Sia Yasotornra.
All right, welcome to another episode of Innovation Calling. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I'm Sia Yasotornra.
And today we have another interesting topic, one that we just saw a presentation on this. We asked Matt to come by because this is, I think there a lot of people know about AR, VR, all the Rs, but I think when it comes to practical applications, how we really use it, what is it for, and there's just so much more than just at the surface, I think, than we all realize. So we have Matt Johnson here. Matt Johnson is from East Edge Studios. Matt came from a tiny little company called Bottle Rocket. You're employee number two there and really helped build that on the app side of things. And I know because of that, and I'll have you tell a little bit of the story, you started tinkering and really started getting into this AR, VR world. So Matt, thank you so much for coming here today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And thank you guys. I appreciate the opportunity to just talk a little bit about something I'm super passionate about.
Yeah, I think I'm excited. So can we go into first
Sure.
a little bit of your background into why you got into this particular space. I know East Edge has been around for a little over a year, correct?
Right. Right.
So can you talk a little bit about how you moved into this particular space and just what intrigued you about this particular technology?
Sure. You mentioned Bottle Rocket. That's definitely where the genesis of this took hold. I mean, I was familiar with virtual reality, I guess, is the R that a lot of this started with and expanded into the full spectrum of solutions. But It was really when the Oculus Kickstarter got announced, and it was this kind of interesting new, you know, when we talk about either mobile or VR, it's like they've had roots planted years ago, and people have been building things for years. But when I talk about the modern era of both of those capabilities, it just seemed a lot really interesting that we had mobile technology now, right? So before, when we had done Upstarts, it's been these crazy Doc Brown-looking headset things that you'd have to fumble around in. And then with the mobile phone, it really gave us the sensors and the high-definition resolution and everything that we would need in order to put VR together. So it sounded intriguing to me. Mm-hmm. So got a part of the Kickstarter there and got the first headset. And I like to tell the story. It's like for the first time in a 25-year career, I didn't know what to expect when I put this headset on. So it's kind of like a kid again, you know, get to experience something for the first time. And of course, I put it on, and there was a demo of a Tuscany villa or something where you could run up and down the stairs. And I remember doing that and nearly making myself sick. But, you know, the idea of like, wow, with a couple of different iterations and years of, you know, innovation and development, that this is really going to be something special. So became a VR fanboy really, really, really early on. And the fortunate, you know, fact that I worked at Bottle Rocket, which is a culture of innovation and hackathons and things like that. So I led the innovation group there, and I brought this in and said, hey, we need to do something around this platform. Of course, my guys who were mainly working on gaming teams at the time were just, oh, yeah, let's build a VR game, right? So that's where we started, and really led to the idea of, you know, we can do this for clients, we can do this in activations. We started developing out use cases for how will this be used in enterprise, of course, entertainment. That's a big first use case in any new platform. So really felt that renaissance once again of, you know, a new platform that we could explore something that was very different than mobile, whereas we had like this contextual in the moment device now where we could dive in and dive out with extract the information that we want. We've lost something with focus, right? So this was now a tool of complete immersive focus that we could use both in engagement, entertainment, and business.
Yeah. So can you, all right, and I know it's going to be a little bit harder because Sure. you've got a really great PowerPoint of describing AR, VR.
Sure.
Can you just describe the different Rs and the, like, Okay. what's completely submersive versus just...
Right.
Yeah.
So I usually like to talk about it as a spectrum, obviously. Mm-hmm. So on the far left side, as we'll talk about it, right, of the spectrum, you have the real world or reality, or, you know, as we talk about it in relation to technology, or a camera phone, right? We could see everything through a typical phone and capture it and record it. So as you move to the right, you start to... overlay information, so to speak, in terms of that on top of that camera lens. So augmented reality, as a lot of people have referred to it in, and one of the great use cases, like Pokemon Go is an example of this, is taking like a sheet of glass with information in front of the camera lens and placing that in front of it. So it's not really vision aware, and it doesn't really understand the environment it's in beyond like geolocation and certain awareness like that, but it's really not using the device's capabilities to understand spatial relationships in depth and things like that. So
I guess would you say, like with Pokemon Go and those types of applications, it's almost like a pane of glass on top of an existing
We could paint things on top of it, basically. And they have evolved over their, you know, upgrades and things like that into be more spatially aware. So I'm not saying that they live in this kind of static state, so to speak, because AR is evolving, right? But I think when you think of traditional AR, I think of it as like, do you remember the old app Word Lens, where it was this cool thing years ago on the App Store where you can like drag it across any language and it would translate it right there on the sign? Into the language of your choice.
That's a
great AR app example of like, it's just, it's something using something static in the environment. It's adding data to it, but it's not really like anchoring content in the world, like 3D elements and things like that.
So it's not a hologram, right? I'm thinking Star Wars, right? So it's not like you're the only one, Obi-Wan.
Yeah. You're not playing battle chess with R2-D2 quite yet. But but AR is getting there right now, and there's some other specialty tools which, as we progress down the spectrum, that are allowing us to do that right now. So taking another step to the right, we get into a term that's kind of used synonymously with a bunch of different things, but MR, mixed reality. Right. So that's more of the idea of, I have very powerful either computers that I'm wearing on my head or carrying or something like that, that recognize the room, and it can build spatial relationships and create a cage, basically, or a 3D model of the space that you're in, and allow you to place content in that world and then walk around it, move around it. It remains static. It remains anchored to that location. Now, like I said a minute ago, the phones have evolved now to be able to do that. So if you see any of the AR kit or AR core type stuff on iOS or Android respectively, they now allow you to take your phone and walk around it. I did an example for a big aeronautics company where you can plant 777, you know, in a small room at a very small scale,
right,
and then move around it and inspect it from all angles. So the idea of like understanding flat planes by the phones and anchoring things to them, that exists now in mobile, but like higher end devices like the Magic Leap or Microsoft's HoloLens, it really more allows you to have more complex shapes than just flat planes. So if I wanted to anchor things to walls or to specific furniture or things like that, it could really get an understanding, because it has the processors and the technology in it that are more advanced than the phones, of the world around you. And that's the first step to like building a canvas to be able to put content that makes sense to human beings to translate it and understand it in their understanding, as opposed to having to immerse them fully in VR.
Right.
Which is a great segment to the far end of the spectrum. On the far right, you have then virtual reality, which is what I'll call a 100% opaque experience, meaning you don't see any of the real world in there, right? You just see CG or 360 video or whatever someone's created for you to experience.
And is that solely, I have to have the goggles on in order to experience that, or can I experience that outside of?
Well, that technically speaking, is a complete goggles experience.
Okay.
Now, there's a whole spectrum within the spectrum there, right? Because everybody's heard of Google Cardboard.
Right.
And that's at the very low end if you want to get, I'd call it it's immersion breaking because light seeps into the sides of it, and it's kind of cheap, and it's just depending on all the phone sensors. It doesn't have any secondary vision or, you know, 6 degrees of freedom or hand movements or anything like that. Yeah. So it's still considered VR because you're able to track as you move around, but you know, it's nothing like an Oculus Rift or an HTC Vive or something that's really going to put you immersed in the moment.
So I'm a Trekkie.
You're a Trekkie. Okay.
So the holodeck.
I know where you're going. Okay. The holodeck, right?
Give me the holodeck experience. That's what I want.
Okay, I think we need to get into a whole other conversation about tapping into the cerebral cortex before we get to the holodeck there. But this, I think this is the underpinnings of really you know, starting to combine the senses. Michael Abrash, who's the chief scientist at Oculus, you know, is a well-known technologist, has been from Microsoft and other companies. I remember a few years ago at Oculus's conference, put up a slide as his closing statement and said, I'm most excited about the number of job opportunities that VR in itself is going to spawn. And if you're a kid that's getting into STEM or something like that today, he listed everything from ophthalmology to cognitive neuroscience to, you know, obviously engineering and all these kind of things, like to push these devices forward because we're so in tune and we're so sensitive to the world as human beings. It's going to open up so many more doors than these rectangles have, right? I mean, mm-hmm. we've been looking at these for years, but right. changing the canvas to be infinite degrees of 360 opens up whole new UX paradigm, right?
Right.
I mean, it's just of innovation.
I just can't think of all, I can't help but think of all the use cases of healthcare, just, you know, how making that the international level set, if you will, to exchange information. And can you imagine how accelerated healthcare can be, right? When doctors can create better techniques, working truly collaboratively, looking at a patient, et cetera. I mean, I'm so beyond excited. I'm also thinking rudimentary as a kid. I can't tell you dissection of frogs.
Right.
But frogs were chosen because they're somewhat simpler anatomy and smaller and all that. But can you imagine, like, if we can specialize students who do want to go down that path of veterinary science or whatever, healthcare or doctor or whatever, they can go right into it with a lower cost of entry and still get that visual experience.
Well, absolutely. And you think about, obviously, you want to practice. That's one of the key pillar areas, I think, especially VR is made, and AR as well, is designed for, made for, but in areas that are potentially, you know, expensive or threatening or you know, life or death in the case of this. So your dissection thing, I mean, it's like we've used cadavers for years to train on it, and nothing takes the place of the real thing at some point in there. But you're right. Can they put in 1,000 hours in a simulator before they do that, just like pilots have done 4 years, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, now it's accessible with this new technology and this new hardware. But yeah, it's an incredible use case when you talk about, you know, the haptics and everything that are coming in line to support this. One of those areas on that slide again of like people making gloves and getting tactile feedback and being able to get very close to what a real feel of that experience will be. It's just exciting to kind of see all these industries take it and say, well, I didn't even know I could solve for this problem. And now this new device is sparking that innovation for them, right?
So yeah. East Edge Studios then was a creation as a result of the spectrum that you've analyzed, all the XRs of the world.
Yeah, I think it's birthed out of a passion for obviously loving to start new things, being on my fifth kind of involvement in a startup.
Being crazy.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, you know, you like so not sleeping apparently.
Part of it is that, and the other is just that fourth way. I mean, I've been at the beginning of each of the waves, I guess, as they call them, you know, the personal computer. I had the old TRS-80s and Tandy 1000s when they were first coming when I was a kid and learning how to program for the first time. And then the web, obviously, back in the late 90s, I was involved in startups that were really big and creating some of the first websites. Actually, we're sitting here, Stars and Rangers and all that. We created those websites. And then mobile. Right. I was in another company. And when the iPhone hit, I think myself and the founder of Bottle Rocket were both like, wow, here we go again. Number three. Yeah. And then now this for me. I mean, I think this is a little bit different and it doesn't have the same trajectory when you talk about, you know, becoming massively accepted into households because it's a lot more complex. But it's a lot more engaging too. So
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, fact that there are so many people interested in cooking videos and whatnot, I could absolutely see being immersed into a like looking off to the side of how to cook your actual dinner. I can see that.
Yeah. Right.
I don't underestimate the use of someone trying to make their life more convenient for
Certainly.
Sure.
Right.
And can we talk about like the use? Like, let's go into the uses. I know one of the things you mentioned before we hit record was how YouTubers are, like the gamers are taking this, they've built a YouTube following and now they're doing something completely different, which I thought was very intriguing because not at all something I would think of. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about some of these use cases you're seeing that people are really utilizing this outside of just putting on a goggle and making a game out of it or something.
Right. So I think you've seen a lot probably on Apple keynotes and on stage, you know, prospects for gaming. And for that, it's not just YouTubers that are looking to extend their channels and their brands into new areas. And that might be XR. That just might be mobile gaming for them right now, which is still a relatively new arena when you talk about how do I extend my brand and engage the customers that are demanding and playing games all day long, right? I've got to meet them where they are. But AR especially, I mean, going back to the boom that happened with Pokemon Go is the idea of, like, you got to find the right case where it's not completely a novelty. There is a lot of novelty. I mean, people love the novelty of Snapchat, and that's AR, right? And the idea of I could put a face on myself, record it. But I think what's most compelling to them is the idea of this new realm of content creation. So anytime I'm augmenting the world and capturing it through that lens, even though I'm sharing it, creating a very complex, composited kind of experience and recording that, I'm still distributing it through a means that is universal, which is video, right? You know, through YouTube or through Vimeo or through one of those channels, right? So it's this new era, I call it, of content creation is what those YouTubers are interested in, is like, how can I get very compelling content out to my audience by using things like AR tools to be able to capture in new ways and provide them with new, engagement.
I'm so excited right now. I'm like jumping up and down. Hopefully no one can hear me like shuffling, 'cause I am so excited. Just the idea of this augmented reality, taking it to the video. This is going to really challenge and upset media.
Sure.
I mean, there's no two ways about this. Is what you are introducing is a new technology, a new paradigm shift in entertainment, how we receive it, how we engage with it, how we want it.
Right.
Are you getting any pushback or are you seeing any pushback from the traditional content creators?
Well, I'm not personally, but my business is centered around enabling them, right? So, I think if you look at it from a societal standpoint, I live under a little bit of the fear. We talked about some irrational fears before the record button hit as well. But I live under the fear of, like, well, what do you believe now? I mean, right. So when the tools are in anyone's hands and they can create any kind of event or media or augment anything in any way, it's hard to sort through what's real and what's fiction. And I just think that's, if we like, whether we like it or not, that's the era we're headed for, is the era of augmentation, right? Silence.
I know.
I'm smiling and I'm also like my shoulders are up and squeezing like, yay, right. And oh my gosh, right?
Well, can we talk about too, like when I hear that, I mean, it's going to up the game, right? It's going to up the game from everybody. We're out of standard video. We want people to experience. We actually, the podcast we recorded right before this, we were talking about like really focusing on creating these experiences for people. And obviously this is that perfect place. My perspective is this available to the everyday content creator, or at what point, like what is the barrier of entry to be able to accommodate different businesses to be able to add this component into what they're offering for their customers? And
honestly, I think with AR specifically, or just even facial recognition and overlays and things like that, which is what Snapchat and Facebook has their own flavor of it, and there's SDKs available to developers, I mean, today. But using it even as a consumer device, it saves your camera roll, and then I use that, as a post on the go type of thing, or I bring it into post production editing and use that as an element. I mean, it's almost like you can piggyback on to tools that are there already, but obviously we have, as developers, have access to these tools as well to create custom tools or enterprise tools for those content creators, or, just say, hey, have at it.
Right.
I mean, the capture devices on the cameras and everything like that have those, capabilities today. So nothing really holds them back. There's no real barriers to creating that right now.
Yeah.
So,
is it expensive though to get people to develop it? I mean, I know people can develop it, but I know even like you and I have talked about this prior about finding the right talent to be able to do a lot of this development too. Is it's very specialized and very difficult even to find people to help. Right. Building your business.
Well, it's definitely Wild West again.
Right? Yeah.
It's the idea of we've learned a lot, and it's rooted in the principles of what we've always known in the gaming industry or in mobile design and development. But I think what's in front of us right now is really exploring user experience in UI design. I mean, again, it's the rectangles. I go back to that yeah. term, but you know, we really understand how to put something on a screen for right. years, but to how understand how to design something that has to be within a certain reach for certain users that, you know, only have a certain type of controller, but others have full motion of their hands in virtual reality. Others can, you know, move in and out of a scene. Others can only rotate their head with 3 degrees of freedom. You know, some people are going to have devices that allow for planar detection. Others are going to have, you know, the thing where it can only recognize images and shapes. So we have still a lot of disparity between these hardware devices and figuring out how to have a good experience or fall back, you know, in a graceful way to, you know, a standard or baseline experience is definitely a challenge that I think is in front of us, because once you figure it out, all the platforms evolve again and create new features that we got to catch up with again. So I think that goes to your question about talent, is finding those great thinkers that, you know, understand where skate to the puck, where it's going to be as opposed to where it is right now is what I always look for in terms of bringing on talent. So
you've lost me.
I lost you.
I'm just kidding. No, which is, you didn't think about, you don't think about this. The challenge is finding, like you say, folks that know where to find that hockey puck.
Right.
And that's where I think with a lot of innovative ideas and a lot of innovation around next generation technologies, I think we are going to struggle. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not sure if our education system is actually setting ourselves up for creating innovators versus teaching them basic coding. You know, I don't want to be mean here, but right. I don't – with what we're talking about, I don't know if we are setting –
sure.
For success,
valid point. You know, I will say, okay. So not a soapbox here, I guess, right. But you know, standing on that idea of understanding how do we meet our kids where they're at in today's society that we've created for them. My youngest is getting ready in about 2 weeks to graduate from high school, and he's moved from a program that, you know, was the traditional public school education system where he struggled. And now he's in this program that allows him to do work online at his own pace, and then has, you know, some seeked assistance when he needs it and whatnot. And he is doing fantastic. And the more I thought about that scenario is like most of our kids are still living in this push society when we need to move them to a pull mentality, right? The world of understanding how to access information, how to communicate well, is right online with, you know, what I would consider yeah. these people that are evangelists for STEM. I mean, I think that's all important, but I think we also need to understand that our kids have fundamentally changed once we put these devices in their hands. And the only way education is going to survive is if we find a way to allow them to pull that information instead of pushing our old world to them, right? Yeah.
I almost feel like with our current education system, it's not meant to be a rant. It's just with the tablets and the mobile devices, just the way they teach now mm-hmm. is completely different than the way it used to, but they're yet using the same content as far as the methodology to teach. I feel like it's yeah. underutilizing the technology that could have probably enhanced the experience of learning right. versus we all got to learn. We understand that, but I think there's ways to enhance that experience to promote perhaps a different way to – you know, the way our culture is evolving.
Right. And another funny point on that line is, you know, talking about back to VR, a lot of people mm-hmm. think of the use case of like, oh, education, I could put someone in the middle of a famous battle or, you know, get them right. there. And I do agree with that focused attention. But part of that program my youngest son is in as well is like they check their phones in. They can't take their phones into the classroom. They check them in before they walk into the classroom. Now, it's still technology experience that they're learning from, and they're pulling information to be able to answer the questions, but it's in a controlled kind of engagement state, which I think is what's so great about VR as well, is, you know, it's like how much can our kids really learn when they're not having to split their time and their attention between five different things?
I think we could all learn that.
Well, sure, and that's not just you.
Just my
that's
kid, all of us yeah. Right? yeah. I want to talk more about some more use cases too, just to sure. really help our listeners like wrap their brain around this. Cause I know it's just so many different ways you can do this outside of, again, we got the Star Wars Jedi game. So that's where okay. like we have, and I've fought against, yes, so, snow troopers or stormtroopers and stuff. Yeah. I am not a good one to compare. I'm not a Star Wars girl, but my son thinks it's the most amazing thing in the world. But anyway, like you gave an example of when you were building your house, you built like a whole model. And I know like you were giving an example of a business that still builds, isn't like foam to scale, like replicas of a store. And that's how they, I mean, the costs that these businesses are putting in to try to get an idea, but you know, buildings or I want to experience, maybe I'm live in California and I'm buying a house in Texas. I want to go be in that house instead of just, I want to be in that house, not just see the pictures and the virtual tour.
Right.
But all of these different use cases of letting people really truly experience a buying purchase. Can you talk about some of those examples? Oh,
absolutely. And I think there's two kind of tiers of the cake you're talking about, right? So at the kind of prosumer tier that I'll talk about, having 360 video and the cameras now to get a pretty good quality 360 video is, you know, $200.
Right.
So it's incredible, like what can be done. And sent to headsets now, they're also $200, right? So that whole all-in package to have that remote experience to show someone, hey, sit in the middle of this house if you're doing live footage, to be able to see it. I mean, that's there today. I mean, there's great you know, solutions. And then even taking that a step further to really build some great depth into the scenes with photography, which is a process of taking real photos around an area and then uploading them all, you know, to an AI or, a machine learning system in the cloud. And it crunches them together to find the commonalities and creates a mesh and a better spatial understanding of that. So you could almost create 3D environments from 2D pictures if you take enough of them.
Wow.
So if you're talking about an area you might want to talk about with someone that's an expert, that's a really cool evolving space that is ancillary to what these platforms we're talking about today are. So that's on a consumer level, 360 video. But I think the real compelling use case to me is like, well, visualizing what doesn't exist yet, because I'm about to spend a lot of money making it exist.
Exactly.
So, you know, using 3D tools and programs. I mean, most everything now, you know, on an engineering standpoint is built in something like SolidWorks to kind of get the form and understand the 3D spatial relationships. Or AutoCAD has been used for years to build out extrusions of houses for the architects and the engineers to understand what they're building. Well, taking all that data now and routing it, you know, into one of these platforms gives you kind of this awareness of the spatial understanding that you've always had to look at, you know, static images or flat images to understand. Or even in 3D, you could fly through them, but you really understand if I'm sitting across, looking at a 3D model, how big is that thing? Or does that obstruct that view? As soon as you put one of these headsets on, I mean, you can just literally swing your head around and look and say, oh, wow, we got to move that pillar. That might be a $10,000 or $100,000 mistake, depending on the scale of your project. And if you would have known that at the beginning, you know, it's a lot easier to make those changes digitally before you do it. So I think using that as a tool for, you know, everything from there's incredible sketching programs in VR now of like to be able to sketch things at scale and forms and move around them, walk around them and have spatial understanding. Not just architecture, but it's just that seems to be a no-brainer in the pipeline now for architects and industrial designers.
I was just going to say industrial. Yeah. I can't think of those applications would be amazing, especially as we look at and evolve our machinery to more of the, you know, embracing more of the robotics and the AI around that, which we talked about earlier.
Well,
it's on top of mind right now.
But it just feels to me that with that business case, it just makes, it's a no-brainer. Like, A, the cost is going to be way less than probably just even building a replica. B, like you said, it's going to create that whole experience, reduce costs. Why aren't you a whole group of them lining up out the door to be like, no-brainer, we need to get this. Yeah. What's their hesitation for doing this?
I'm not so sure there's a hesitation as more of like a lot of architects at the high end, at least, that are doing projects like this, you know, have visualization teams and have guys that are being able to put the chocolate and the peanut butter together, so to speak. So I'm not saying that this isn't happening because it is within the industry, but I think that moving that to the next tier of like, well, when, you know, custom home builders want to do it, how does that make sense? And that really depends on how quickly do we get the technology in the hands of the consumer. So it's like a mobile device. Everyone has it. and they can access, access. Actually, to build on that point, Aaron, I think where the disruption could happen immediately with them is in design centers. Mm-hmm. I mean, so my wife and I built a couple of houses, and that's like the most painful process in the world.
Yeah, I don't think I
can't stand the design center.
I think most people get divorced right about them, too.
You know, fortunately, we've weathered the storm for that one. But, you know, I think that, you know, there's an opportunity to really disrupt the idea of I want to see all what this tile looks like in this kind of lighting. And then, you know, I see it at one time a day in one lighting. What's it look like in my house that I'm building, not in this little cross section of environment. It's ripe for innovation. I think the challenge of the industry right now is just like they're moving from a world where they've just got accustomed to the web, mm-hmm. and we've thrown mobile at them. And they're trying to figure out how to just grasp the enormity of mobile right now. And now we're throwing XR at them. And it's a little overwhelming. I think that until their tools really catch up and it feels like an easy pipeline where they could just kind of say, okay, I built it here and I understand how to distribute it. If it moves here and I have a use case for that, awesome. But I can't wrap my head around all that right now. I think to answer your question before that, that's one of the bigger challenges is just the education. And still so many people have not tried high-end VR. I mean, I hear people all the time that say, yeah, I tried cardboard. VR is okay. I'm like, oh, gosh, I need to get you in something that will blow your mind. And it's out there. Right?
I think there's I think right now, because it is so early on, you know, you think of that bell curve, right?
Right.
There is a misperception, right, that it's, oh, just a game. Like, I just want to play games with it.
Right.
No one, at least from a society at large, I think is viewing it as, oh, my gosh, there's actual practical, you know, business use cases that's going to be that will apply to my daily life.
And that actually can build an ROI, too. I think that, yeah.
Right.
I mean, yeah, I was going to ask you, is it cost prohibitive or is it more mentally prohibitive than cost prohibitive or is it a combination?
Well, I'll tell a story because that's what I do.
Hey.
Okay. Like so, talking back to the Bottle Rocket experience, we had just finished a iPad sales enablement tool for an oil and gas company, and a lot of the process was taking something they did have in SolidWorks in their organization, these massive drill bits, right? And they would take these to trade shows and display 3 or 4 of them, and you know, just like a 100 by 100 booth space floor print. So the ROI right there is the idea of like, could you actually, you know, reduce that footprint and cost of that, the shipping and dryage of something like that. You know, the overall cost of the show could go down exponentially. But even more than that, what's the value of being able to give someone an experience that helps them understand your product better, moves them quicker down the sales funnel, and could see it at scale and in context of the environment that they're going to be using the product in.
Ooh.
So to me, it's not only a cost savings ROI, but it's a, you know, it's moving them down the funnel as well. So I think tools like this in the right situation, obviously it doesn't work for, you know, I'm not going to go buy, you know, my next t-shirt this way, right? I think that's a little bit overkill, but I think for these types of sales where it's very hard, it's very expensive, and it's very difficult to visualize, I think these tools play an important role.
Do you see the government embracing VR more, or do you think it's still in that experimental, or are we not allowed to talk about it?
Well, I don't know.
Like
who's working in the government right now?
Well, I mean, government contracts.
Yeah, that's true. Well, not in the next several weeks,
no,
for
actually,
sure.
Breaking news. I think they just ended it, actually.
I did. So. Yeah, they did.
Did they? Yeah. I'm like, okay. Did you just timestamp this? Okay. No, but I mean, do you see the government embracing this type of technology, this next wave?
Yeah. Actually, I think that the government has been, and when you talk, especially in the armed forces, has been an innovator in this space.
Right.
If you think of what the Army has done in the idea of simulation and really been a forward thinker in that, I see them continuing to do that in situational-based training, for sure. That's a great primary use case for the technology. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's lots of other social programs and things that, you know, can bring awareness. And we talk about empathy a lot. In VR, right? It's the idea of the great empathy machine is you could place someone in the middle of an area that they've never been to and understand a situation in a very emotional level that you just can't get from video, right? And I think there's been a lot of great journalism pieces done and other parts of the world that are giving people that understanding and empathy of moving them to action, right?
Right. So I know you have certain projects and I'm not asking you to like disclose those or anything, but if you were to predict kind of the things you'll be working on in 3 years or so, 2 to 3 years, let's say, it's probably even way too far in the future for something like this.
Right.
But what are some of the things you see this evolving in? Like where?
Oh, good question. Wow. Okay. Well, I think the convergence of AI. Okay, so yeah, we'll use a lot of terms.
That's cool. Around here. We're all about the hashtag. Like,
you want the hashtag?
Okay, all right. So,
go for it.
the tools that I'm talking about are just delivery mechanisms, right? The important things that surround them are the idea of the network, right? So can I get this information, especially with AR, and thinking, are we going to evolve to something that's a ergonomic, lightweight headset that gives me a great experience so I don't have to, like, carry my phone camera around all the time. I think that's where mobile is going to try and converge anyway, in my opinion. So we have this headset. It's able to capture data through, you know, cameras and microphones and all kinds of sensors or whatever. And it has to have a network that it can push up to in real time and pull down from in real time to get it. So that's the, you know, 5G and figuring out, like, how does that become prevalent is a piece of that puzzle. But then once the data gets up there, you have this concept of, like, crunching on data in real time to giving you insights, or, you know, doing some kind of post-crunch, you know, where you can get a report at some point, and you're going to need some kind of mix of both. And we always talk about in the technical world is like the client's doing some work and the server's doing some work, right? So figuring out the marriage between those two and the network to be able to handle that data is primary, right? So there you have 5G in the network, you have AI and machine learning to be able to kind of crunch what you saw and what you did and reference those data sets across, you know, similar actions that were taken by other people and their, you know, results from them to be able to give you what they, at the end of the day, I call actionable insights. It's like big data is great and all, but if I don't know what to do with it, it doesn't mean anything. Right. And then the third piece is delivering them into a headset or something that's back what captured it in real time, showing me, okay, here's the action that I think you should take, or here's something that I think is important to capture and store for them. Wow. So it gives me, you know, this full circle or this full, you know, almost instantaneous realization of what I'm seeing, what I'm doing, and how I could do it better. Optimism, the era of augmentation, once again, right? You know, but how that's displayed, obviously, I'm my business is very interested in doing it in a very, you know, immersive and engaging way by using these new headsets to be able to output that. But each one of those things I talked about is a silo of incredible innovation in itself with lots of different, you know, things that it has its veins in as well, not just these devices. So I think I've never seen a time where there's been more opportunity for innovation across so many things. So to predict that picture of what it's all going to look like when it converges is almost impossible.
It's probably hard to say what 6 months ahead.
But we're skating through the puck. I'll say it again. Right. You know, it's the idea of, like, what I love to see and where I'd like to see my business go is really focus on those cases where you mentioned ROI earlier. It's the idea of, like, wow, our business was completely transformed the way that we sell something or the way we train on something. So, you know, before we did it in the very inefficient way, you know, through PowerPoints or manuals or on the job training, and, you know, they all still have their spot, but I want the core piece of onboarding and training and ongoing training and sales to be immersive media.
As a former salesperson, I can't tell you how exciting that sounds to me, because I cannot bear to look at another PowerPoint.
Right.
And I've seen these videos where they try to make it somewhat simulated, but it's still a video. It's still very much talking at me versus me being submerged immersed into it.
Right. It's a big challenge because taking all that organizational data and reformatting it or repurposing it into these tools is no small task. I mean, that's what blocks a lot of them from innovating faster than a lot of them want to innovate faster, but it's just like, you know, how do we turn a big ship like that and point it in a new direction? Well, you pick pieces off that are in those areas that I was talking about, like what's the most mission critical or dangerous, or, you know, a cost savings opportunity or sales opportunity that we have. And let's focus on that first.
I totally want to pimp you guys out like crazy. It's the coolest thing ever. And especially with your demo. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Because
I'm so excited. Just like I'm twitching. So Matt, I guess if you could help me understand one last thing, and sure. I want to be respectful for your time here. And this is, you know, if you are saying that you are looking at the future of how we are engaging, where that next puck is going to be, is there any recommendation that you have the next generation of folks that are interested in the XR world, what path you would suggest that they should go towards? Because I think we'd mentioned earlier, and I think maybe I'm stuck on this whole lack of education, being able to accommodate this. Like, what are you looking and suggesting that people should start looking towards if they're not already?
Yeah, I think as a general kind of approach, I mean, you have the big buckets of I want to be an engineer and program and build things, obviously, a number of different languages to get involved in, either at a lower level. I mean, if you want to go mobile AR, things like Objective-C, doing native development on iPhone or Java for native development on Android. We tend to use a lot of tools that are more focused around gaming, immersive media, like Unity. So C# is the language.net that's behind that. You know, that's one category. Then I think your second category is your artists, right? So I just investing in talent, or if you're a young person and you have creative mind to become a 3D modeler or animator, you will never run out of work again, ever again. We will never come back to a point where, wow, that talent isn't in demand. So it's a very exciting time for artists and animators, in my opinion, because we've only scratched the surface of the opportunity for them. And that's programs like Maya or Blender and, you know, we talk about architecture, like the Autodesk tools and things like that, depending on specific industries and what needs to be done. And then I mentioned earlier, UX. Those are the, you know, I guess when you talk about the Wild West again, those are the cowboys and cowgirls that are figuring out how to ride the range there. Because, I mean, I still think that I've seen some interesting stuff in VR, but I don't think anyone's figured out, you know, everyone talks about the killer app or whatever that, I'm not sure what that means exactly. But the idea of like, it's evolving, and to continually understand like how do we mesh humans with these new platforms and make it cohesive and natural is really the hardest job that exists, is user experience design. And it's taken for granted a lot of times because you think, well, we'll just program it and put some pretty art on it and we're done.
Slap it up and put it up.
No, yeah. That's the glue that holds those other two, you know, paths together. So, you know, any of those three areas, I think, have unlimited potential across all the different technologies, whether it's AI and, you know, machine learning, or, you know, looking at, you know, traditional, like, how do you bring these legacy customers online into new systems that need teams to be able to do that? Really, that's infinite possibilities for people that get into those areas. And maybe I'm a little biased because, right, you know, I grew up with probably more foot in a digital native than most of my peers did, just because I was interested in it at the time. But I've told my son the other day, I've never seen a time where you've had more tools and opportunity at your disposal as a creative than right now.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, I graduated 99. I did like Visual Basic. That was like a little, I mean, but it was like you coded and it was very black and white of being a coder, right? Like, right, you developed, that's all you did. And it was very straightforward. Now, being a developer, like, well, you just listed like 10 different languages, yeah, right there. You know what I mean? It's so.
Well, that's a big pendulum, yeah, swing, actually, because back in the late 80s, early 90s, a lot of this was so new in terms of visual computing. Mm-hmm. that's I was a jack of all trades. Oh yeah. I just need a computer program. I don't care what you do with graphics. I don't care. Just do it all,
right.
You know, kind of thing. So you kind of learn by trial by fire. Not great at any one of those areas, probably. But then you're right. It swung back after about 10 years into specialization into those different groups. And now I feel like it's swinging back because the tools are maturing and people can, like, they're more accessible and not like ones and zeros that we had to program out.
Right.
They could say, well, maybe I can do the art, and they experiment with it and they see that. And that's why the hackathons and things like that are just so great, because they free people from the constructs of their day-to-day life of what they told themselves or other people told them what they are and what they could do. It's like clean the slate. I'm a designer, developer, artist now.
Well, right? it's almost like this wave that we're talking about with VR is that convergence between STEM and STEAM, right? Adding the arts into it to make it much more relatable, much more human, intuitive, you know, interaction. It's not just a techie game, you know what I mean, or you know whatever. Right. So, I mean, that's what's really I'm excited about to hear as well and see where you guys take this.
No, it's awesome. But I'll add one more, like, important thing for all that I've learned is communication. I just, in a world that's becoming more and more quick and fragmented, I find that as a lost art, in my own opinion, of, like, how do we really keep humans at the center of what we're doing here and not lose perspective of that, and use these tools to find better ways to engage with each other on a deeper level, as opposed to moving people in and out of the channel faster and faster and faster, right?
Right.
I mean, it's an interesting dilemma that we're in right now. As we push forward, we need to keep in the perspective of, you know, we're doing this for the purpose of the human.
So. Right.
Humans? What?
And I'm sorry, I know you just had an AI and robotics talk, I think. And I'm as big a Westworld fan as the next guy, but, you know.
Yeah. I love that show so much.
I think it's a good note, though, to say that we like people and we're worried about people to end it.
Well, fine. End it.
But Matt, thank you so much. This has been very interesting. If somebody wanted to learn more about East Edge Studios, connect with you, where should they go?
Sure. Our website at www.eastedgestudios.com is a great place to reach out. And you can always reach me at matt@eastedgestudios.com.
All right. So. And of course, we'll have that on our notes page over at innovationcalling.com. So Matt, thank you so much. See you. Anything?
No, I don't. I'm just in awe of this entire conversation. I'm totally stoked. So thank you, Matt, so much for bringing this, just educating us on the Rs. That's really helpful.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Sia and Aaron. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely.